welcome to episode 2 of Perception Issues, the difficult second episode. Hello, Annabelle. How are you?
Hi, Ian. Can I just say something?
Sure.
Your notes say intro music 15-ish seconds, but the intro music was approximately 22 seconds.
Really?
I just thought I'd say that.
Okay.
Just thought I'd bring it up, mention it.
Well, there are some flaws here. We need to sort those out. We need to iron those out, don't we? How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
It's a bit warm at the minute, isn't it?
Well, it's summer, Ian.
Summer in Sydney.
I believe it's going to be warmer tomorrow, but then not so warm on Wednesday.
Oh, thank you for that. Excellent. Okay.
If you need any weather updates, I'm here.
Excellent. Well, maybe we need to bring that into the show. The show. Welcome to the show. What a show we've got lined up for you tonight, today, whenever you're listening to this. So yeah, last time we spoke about words, and I think we both... I think we both learned a few things. Segue. I've been saying segue all over the place, and it's just, oh, Jesus. There it is.
Segue.
And I think synecdoche.
We don't talk about it. No one uses that word in a sentence anyway. Who's ever used that word in a sentence?
I use it quite often.
Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah. Okay, well, this episode, we're going to have a chat about books and films. Books versus films. Films versus books. But we're not going to go for that big question. What's better, the book or the film? Because I think that's a bit of a moot point, really. Because generally, 9 times out of 10, I think we can agree it is the book.
Well, I just think it's whichever was done first.
Okay. Well, what we actually want to talk about here is, should you read the book before watching the film or watch the film before reading the book? Annabelle, what do you reckon?
I think it's whichever one was done first. Because sometimes they bring out books after the film's been made and then they bring out a book based on it.
A novelization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I didn't know the big word. Woohoo! Okay, novelization.
Novelization.
Yes, that. And then the, you know, motion, best-selling motion picture, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, then I wouldn't read the book, would I? I mean, why would I want to read the book if it's based on a film? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but you do hear people saying, oh, yeah, that was good, but you've got to watch the book. You've got to watch the book?
Watch the book.
Watch the book, make sure it doesn't move. Read the book first. And I don't agree with it.
I know you don't agree with it.
I'm a watch the film first guy.
I just think, so my example, which I always think I come back to from years and years ago, is I read Interview with the Vampire, and then I watched Interview with the Vampire, and the film was a good film. I quite enjoyed it, but it didn't convey the same sense that the book did, and the characters were not the same, the way they look, the way they talk was not what I had pictured them to be. Whereas if I had seen the film first, I would forever think of them in their characterization. I would never be able to make my own opinion on what they should look like.
Okay. Well, that seems to be the biggest thing people are saying. Well, once you've seen this, that's how you'll see it.
Yeah, well, it's true. You can't help it.
I guess there's an element of that, but for me, it's the trade-off. If I read a book before watching a film, I'm not going to then watch that film as a film. I'm going to watch it as an adaptation. So last episode, we spoke about The Martian. I struggled to sort of sum up how I felt about that, because when I was watching it, and with other films where I read the book first, you watch it and then you're taken out of it when something happens that it's different to how you know it from the book. So, I mean, for me, I think the real first time that I realised this was, it was Lord of the Rings. I watched the first two films. I didn't read Lord of the Rings. And then watched the first two films. I love this. This is amazing. And then I read all three books before the third film. And whilst watching the third film, sat there going, what the fuck is this?
That's because the third film wasn't as good, Ian.
The what?
The third film wasn't as good.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. I feel like I can't comment.
I watched the first Lord of the Rings, and then I read the books, and then I saw the second and third. And I still enjoyed them. I don't have an issue with watching the film after. I just think I want to make up my own mind.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough.
And I also don't think, I think that, especially now, like you look at what has come out in the last few years, there are so many book adaptations. Like The Martian, I don't know what year it was released as a book, but it wasn't that long ago. And then it's already made into a film like immediately. Like Gone Girl, same thing. It's made so quickly nowadays that you don't. I don't feel like I have to. There's too many films that are book adaptations. There's not actually that. There's like of the proportion of films out in the cinema. There's a high proportion now which are book adaptations or flipping remakes. Yeah. Break. Very upset.
I think we'll come on to that in a later episode. But yeah, I'd actually like to know what percentage of films made is it actually come from books.
Like, you think about the number of young adult ones. Every single apocalyptic young adult book is being made into a film.
Yeah.
Almost all of them that have been popular. And it's just, I won't read every book. I haven't read The Martian. I'm not going to read The Martian. Quite glad I saw the film.
Mm. Yeah, and that was, whilst reading it, I thought it would be a better film than a book. Like I said, we weren't going to go into that question, but that's what I saw. There are instances where I feel that with, I'm trying to think. I think American Psycho, I did it the film, then book, and then was like, definitely the film over the book. It's difficult, isn't it? You're weighing up a verbal medium against a visual medium, and sometimes that really works, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm definitely in the, let me watch the film first, because the book is a much more complete thing, I can kind of tuck the film aside and say, okay, I can, if the book's good enough, I can conjure up more than what the film's given me and fill out those gaps and actually go, this is a world.
But you will always see that character as that character. Frodo will forever be Elijah Wood.
I don't know. I can forgive that.
Yeah, you can what?
I can forgive that.
You can forgive that.
But also to come back what you said, come back to what you were saying at the start.
Did you just say combat what I said? I'm just going to combat what you said.
I'm trying to remember what you said now. Something about the novelization of films.
I don't understand that.
So
that's just lazy.
It's weird. It's just like, well, I'm going to go and sit over here and write that. But the example, one of the things which I always thought of was when Kubrick made 2001, he approached Arthur C. Clarke. He was like, I want to make a sci-fi film. So this is the guy I've got to talk to. So it wasn't Arthur C. Clarke's like, here's a book of mine. He gave him a number of short stories of his, and they said, oh, this has got potential. And this is the best way, I think, you take a short story
and you can then expand it. They did that with The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. That didn't end well, did it? That didn't work for anybody.
What was the endings? Some people want to be dancers. I don't think I've ever been so angry at the end of a film.
Oh. Also, it doesn't make sense. If you're a tiny man, you have to be a giant baby.
That's true.
You can't just mess with the laws of physics.
But yeah, come back to 2001. So they settled on this short story, and then Kubrick went and made the film, basically wrote the screenplay, and Arthur C. Clarke wrote the book, and they came out. So they worked on them concurrently. They came out together, and they were different. There were differences between them, and that's like It's a perfect example, because it's like, this is what film can do with this story. This is what a book can do with this story. They have their differences because of the medium that they're in, really. So.
Yeah, it's a hard one, because you can never rewind, wipe your mind, and start again to prove or disprove whichever way you say it.
I like the way you said that. That was very poetic.
What? Just rewind and wipe your mind?
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, I mean, we're not going to go on this. I mean,
but I remember, just coming back to the interview with the vampire, because it really stuck with me.
Yeah.
When that bit where he's put in the coffin and then bricked up in the wall... The description of that in the book stayed with me for a long time.
Yeah.
Whereas in the film, I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, oh yeah, he's fine. He'll be fine. Didn't emotionally grab me.
I can't really remember that film.
It is a good film.
I'm not sure if I've actually seen it.
Yeah. It's another one of those popular films you haven't seen, Ian.
Can you stop banging the table?
I didn't do that on purpose. I'm sorry.
So angry. Well, we'll leave that there. I'm definitely on the... film before the book side of things, and you may be slightly different.
Yeah, but I'm open, but I would like to make up my own mind.
Okay. Well, let's go into films now, and let's go into a film which came out very recently, which came from a book, a very well-selling series of books. It's it's Mockingjay Part 2, The Hunger Games.
Finale.
I held my fingers up, though no one will ever see. So obviously you read these books.
Yes, I did a while ago.
I didn't.
No. Well, young adult's my little, what's the word? It's like my guilty pleasure. I'll read a proper book.
Yep.
And then I'll read an easy sort of adventure, fun-filled fantasy young adult book, and then a proper book again.
Yeah.
So the books were like, I didn't love them. I had a few issues with them. So I wasn't going in watching the movies expecting, you know, going to be angry because they had ruined something that I thought was amazing. I thought the books are young adult books, and although the themes are very interesting, Battle Royale, they still are young adult books at heart. So there's a lot of, like, there's a very, very clumsy love story, which is equally as clumsy in the book,
yeah, really,
as it is in the movie.
I know that, having watched awful films with you, one of your biggest gripes is Peter in how he appeals.
Don't get me started.
In the film versus the book.
He's known for being tiny. You know, everyone knows that he's small, and they couldn't hide that. And in the film, every time Jennifer Lawrence goes to hug him, she has to bend down. Like, you can see her bending down. And he is supposed to be an enormous giant that throws bags of flour around as though they were, like, you know, paper dolls or something. Yeah, very. I mean, how hard can it be to cast a giant man?
So, were you impressed by this film?
I thought it. I enjoyed it. I didn't mind. I didn't love it. I think it set itself up to. It had a hard job to do because it's the last one.
Yep.
So it was always going to have. Also, because it split the book into, which makes it more complicated.
Yep.
I liked some of the scenes. I didn't like others. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to.
Okay.
Spoiler.
Well, like I said, I haven't read the books. The films up to this point were interesting. One and two, obviously they're very high concept. It is Battle Royale, and it's set in those arenas. Kids made to fight each other. Yeah, what's going on here? The third one we didn't watch for a long time, for whatever reason. We're just kind of like, I'm not interested. Then we happened to see it a couple of weeks ago, and it pulled me back in. I was like, oh, this is going somewhere. This is the film which everyone was like, oh, yeah, you know, that nothing happens because they're building up to the last one. And then the last one, I think a lot of it I liked. Sort of halfway through, I was kind of like, yeah, this is kind of cool that you know, they're trying to get to a place. And then if I can just say, by the end of it, I was done. It's the worst.
It's just very hard to end.
It's the worst of the four films.
Have to end it because it's still got a 13 or 12 or whatever certificate it's got. So they have to end it in a way which is going to be okay with people of that age.
Yeah.
As is the book.
Yeah.
So it was never going to be a satisfying ending because it has to be cheesy.
Yeah, there was one thing at the end which I couldn't work out if it was supposed to be. I wasn't supposed to see that coming when I did. I obviously can't talk about that. When I actually thought about they're underground trying to infiltrate this city, yeah? I did think very video game. Different levels, fighting different monsters. I can handle that. That's cool.
But that's kind of... I mean, I don't have a problem with that because that's... That's going back to what it was in the arena.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Release the hounds, and then it's release the whats and the mutts and whatever.
I think I like that, but then it was a bit too much of that. And for me, I wanted to see what else was going on, like, not just in that particular group, because it's like, oh, this is what Katniss is, this is where Katniss is, this is... This. Obviously, it's all about her, but I wanted to see the wider world. What are the rest of the rebels doing? You hear about this front line, you're like, oh, what's happening there?
It's because, I think, even, again, in the book, I think it's just... It's a hard thing to conclude because it's all arena, games, Katniss. You're within this enclosed world. The whole book is based in this enclosed world. And then all of a sudden, in the first half of the last book or the first film, it's all about politics. Really, that's the focus is on the politics. And then in the last bit, they're trying to combine action and politics to a young audience. Like, that's hard.
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
Out of 10?
5.7.
That's very specific.
Yeah, I feel it.
I give it a 6.5.
So we've also got another film we watched recently. Dope. Dope. Dope.
Are you trying to sound gangster?
No. Well, this film is... It's about... I'm going to struggle to describe this. It is about the gangster... the gangster way of life. In LA, Inglewood.
So yeah, I think it's about
set in that area, but it's a much different sort of take on it. It's kind of
breaking almost, the stereotypes of it.
Yeah, kind of a comedy about three
produced by Forest Whitaker.
Yeah, and narrated by him at some points randomly. So it's about three kids who sort of don't really fit in.
They live on the wrong side of the tracks, but they're not really like everyone else.
Yeah, Was it? They said that they're into the really white shit.
Yeah. Donald Glover.
Yeah, Donald Glover. So yeah, this was just an enjoyable film, really. It all felt, fairly contrived, but in like a kind of nice and fluffy way. It's.
Yeah, I think I could see how people could get annoyed with it.
Yeah.
But I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was nice. It was a good, enjoyable watch. Wasn't too long. Didn't take itself too seriously. I didn't enjoy the unraveling of the story at the end.
Yeah.
It suddenly went into an Ocean's 11 moment.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I didn't really enjoy the way they went with that. But I thought the cast were great. The three main characters were awesome. I thought the script was good. The music was excellent. Definitely, I would recommend.
Cool.
Also, very much our generation.
What I remember about that is we saw the trailer for it, and I can't quite remember why, but it sort of really stuck out to me as being, well, we watched a lot of trailers, and it stood out. It was just the way it was put together was cool.
Bit so, different.
We'll find that. We'll put a link for that on Perception Issues.
Out of 10?
That's going to be a 6.5.
You're a harsh marker.
We were doing out of 5 last week.
Well,
last week,
out of 10's easier.
All right, yeah, we'll do letters next time. 6.72.
I'm going to go 7. Solid 7.
Solid 7.
None of this messing around with decimal points.
Okay. Well, as I just said, we watched a lot of trailers, and some of the trailers that kind of stood out that we've seen recently. Oh, God. Well, let's start with Gerard Butler and that dude from Game of Thrones. What's his real name? Nikolai?
I don't know what his real name is.
Well, as we said, he's Jaime Lannister, the Kingslayer. It's a film called Gods of Egypt.
I don't know why he's chosen to do this. And I've only seen the trailer, and that was enough.
Yeah.
Why would you? I mean, you've done well. You've been in Game of Thrones, one of the most popular, if not the most popular series of the last however long, bar Breaking Bad. And you chose this? Really?
Yeah. Well, to be fair to him, he wouldn't have seen a lot of what the film is, because it looks like 95% of it is CGI,
yeah.
And it's badly done. It's full on.
Anything with Gerard Butler. It's just... What is Gerard Butler in that I actually like? Is there something that he's in that I like?
What's he been in? Rom-coms, 500. Is it 500?
300.
500. It felt like 500.
Yeah, but that's Zack Snyder, so that was never going to end well for me.
He's in the White House Down. What rom-com's he in? Heigl?
Something with handcuffs. There's handcuffs involved on the front. He's like a bounty hunter? Is that him? It's just terrible. Oh, he's in P.S. I Love You.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, there's one where
which is actually quite a popular rom-com in the scheme of rom-coms, but no. Just no.
What I like in this trailer is he gets his shouty voice out. It kind of puffs his mouth out.
We are Spartans! It's like that.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, something like that. Not in this trailer, no. In the other one. They're all the same. I'm sorry, Spartans, that is not true. You're not even in the same country or time period.
So yeah, this film looks shocking, basically, and it's had a lot of shit because of...
Even the acting in the trailer, and I'm not giving anything away because it's a trailer, the bit where they go, stealing from a god, only a madman would do that. Where would I find her? And you're like, that's the best you've got?
Yeah. I'd take Clash of the Titans over this.
Yeah, Clash of the Titans any day.
And Wrath of the Titans. That didn't have a guy with his head on fire running over a sand dune.
No.
Smoky head.
Yeah, painful. Why? I don't know why they keep insisting on doing these sorts of films. Awful.
Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah, it's been getting some shit, apparently, because of the lack of diversity in the casting.
You mean all those white Egyptian people?
Yeah.
Irish Egyptian people at that.
He's not Irish, is he?
Isn't he?
I thought he's Scottish.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that much. I'm sorry. I'm sure you're a lovely man, Mr. Butler.
We've really shown our knowledge of Gerard Butler here. We'll
I think he could probably do okay if he chose better films. I'm going to put that out there to him.
You need to get a better agent. Let's move on to the next trailer. The next trailer was Zoolander 2, which, when did the first one come out? Like 15 years ago or something?
Yeah, a long
like
time
10
ago.
Years ago, maybe. I remember when that first came out, I wasn't a big fan, but I've...
You're a late convert, aren't you?
Yeah. But the trailer for this looks like good fun. A shitload of cameos. Benedict Cumberbatch turns up.
14 years ago.
14.
Zoolander came out.
Yeah, and you can see it. And they play on that in what looks like it's going to be the storyline. He's over the hill.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough one because have there been late sequels to very popular comedy films that have actually lived up to the hype? You think about the sequel to Anchorman, just wasn't as good. Nowhere near as good. Dumb and Dumber, no.
But I don't know with this... I don't think there's a perceived sort of falling off of Ben Stiller. You know, like with Dumb and Dumber, where had Jim Carrey gone and stuff? And the family...
Well, he's not done too bad for himself.
Yeah, but I mean, in that sort of space... And I think that length of time between it really helps it, as long as they play to that as well. As long as they're not trying to just pick it up like the day after or whatever.
Yeah, but it's hard because they try and recreate the same sorts of jokes and then it may or may not work. So it's a hard thing to do. And poor old Cumberbatch is in deep doo-doo.
Oh, yeah, because in the trailer, he's seen to portray a transsexual or transgender.
Yeah.
Or asexual model.
Yes.
Which I laughed. I laughed a lot.
I think I'm too innocent to have thought about the fact that it could possibly cause insult or controversy.
Yeah.
I just took it as sort of comedy. But then I suppose we grew up in an era with Bernard Manning, so.
That's true. I shall see. I'm bang up for watching it.
Are you?
Yeah.
Bang up for it.
I'm never bang up for anything, so how about that? Next, Annabelle, we're going to go to not films. We're going to go to books. What book have you read? And tell us about it, and I'll give you 3 minutes. Go.
Okay. So on the topic of books being made into films and young adult, the book that I was thinking about, which has led me to talk about it in this episode, is We Were Liars by E. Lockhart. She is a popular young adult writer. And I have not read any of her other books. This is the only book I've read, and I read it because it was getting quite a lot of press. I think it came out in 2014. I know that the movie rights have been bought, but that's as far as it's gone, so no one's been cast. I don't think it's underway in any way yet, but I think it would be quite an interesting film, and it would be interesting to see how they did it. I think you could go very wrong or very right with it. I was looking for a synopsis on this because it's flipping hard to try and summarise. But what's interesting about it is it's young adult, but it is not apocalyptic or fantasy in any way. It's
what?
Like, I know. What?
What could there's it possibly
no,
be
there's
about?
No
there's
no fifth
else.
Wave. There's no kids killing people. It's just... it's basically this girl who is 17. I'll read the official synopsis because it's so difficult to describe. The official synopsis is, a beautiful and distinguished family, full stop. A private island, full stop. A brilliant, damaged girl. A passionate, political boy, full stop. A group of four friends, the liars, whose friendship turns destructive. A revolution, an accident, a secret. Lies upon lies. True love, the truth. Which means nothing. But basically, this girl, Cadence, I don't know how you say her name, is from a family that is super rich, and they have this private island, and they go there every summer in the Hamptons. And she's been going there forever, and she went there. There was something happened there when she was 15. There was a big accident. She knows that there was a fire involved, but she can't remember anything. Then the year after, her parents sent her off to tour Europe instead, and now she's back for the first time since the accident and has hardcore amnesia. But every time she asks people to tell her what has happened, they say, well, we've told you a million times, and the doctors have said you need to remember it for yourself. So it's narrated by her, and we follow her through this process of going back to the islands, getting back. There's like her and her group who are called the Liars that she gets back involved with, and then her kind of figuring out what happened. And it's not a perfect book by any means, and it's not something that I would say it's a great read. It's a really great book. You should go and read it. But I think it was really... I kind of appreciate what she was trying to do with it, because it's a little bit different. The way that she uses the main character's voice to narrate, she writes it in quite an interesting way. And it doesn't entirely work, but it's nice to see something like that. I think it was a really interesting idea. And I think for the idea alone, it's worth a read.
Hmm. Hmm. Check it out.
It's young adult, Ian.
Young adult. Seems a bit radical. Where's the post-apocalyptic shit?
There's no, yeah, no apocalypse.
Okay, so you would recommend, or?
Yeah, I wouldn't put my name behind it and say it's an amazing book, but I would recommend it because it's an interesting idea.
Okay. The book that I'm going to talk about, which I read recently, is Under the Skin by Michelle. I believe his name is pronounced Michelle Faber. Born in Holland, grew up here in Australia. This came out in 2000. Obviously, the film has been out recently, which I've not seen, and it's been in my top three films to see for about 2 years. It's directed by Jonathan Glazer, who did a lot of good music videos and adverts and all that shit. So the book itself, let me read a synopsis to you. Isley is a female driver who cruises the Scottish Highlands picking up hitchhikers. Through what appear to be casual conversations, she determines their drifter status and further assesses their physical suitability. And those that are found satisfactory, she takes back to a secluded farm. Scarred and awkward, yet strangely erotic and threatening, she listens to her hitchhikers as they open up to her, revealing clues about who might miss them if they should disappear. So she's just driving around rural Scotland in a knackered old car, checking out hitchhikers, picking them up, and if all seems right with them, she basically takes them back to this farm. That's as much as I'll say, really. And I got hold of this book, and I kind of opened it up just to... I'll do this with books. You know, you open up and have a quick read of the first page or something, and then before I knew it, I was a quarter of the way through. That's... It kind of grabbed me. Just the way it was written, it really... I don't know, it really appealed to me. I really liked it. And because it's a really sort of compelling read. This, why is she picking up these people? What is she doing with them? How is she working them out? What is going on here? And as it goes on,
Is it a long book?
No, it's not a long book, no. I'm not a fast reader. I got through it pretty sharpish in about 2 weeks, give or takes, you know, toilet breaks and bus rides and all that stuff. It was one of those ones, it was the last book that I've wanted to get back to reading. You know, it's the last sort of page turner. It is pretty horrifying. When you find out what is going on, all I can say, it is pretty horrible. But then it loses a bit of steam because it kind of flops over into from horror into allegory. And I'm not going to say what because that will give away what it is. And it goes off down that path a bit. And you lose some of the horror in that respect. It's just an all-round kind of disturbing read. I've thought about it quite a bit since. I would recommend this. I really liked it.
Not before you go to bed.
Not before I go to bed. And now I've read the book before I watched the film. So what position does that leave me in?
Uh-oh.
So, well, it's somewhere down the line I'll talk about. Well, hopefully we'll talk about the film. Take from there.
I look forward to it.
Excellent. Excellent. So after books, we go to the television. Annabelle, what have we been watching?
Well, we've been watching Daredevil. Well, we finished Daredevil, which took us a little while.
It did take us a long time.
I don't know. Yeah, it took us longer than it should have. Just because we tend to watch it while we're eating dinner. And it's not appropriate to watch when you're trying to slurp some spaghetti.
Yeah.
It's just not a good idea.
I guess you should say, I think we both agree that it's good.
Yes, it's excellent.
It's good. It's...
Kingpin is amazing.
Yeah, and we'll come on to this, I think, but the Marvel TV shows, not Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we've not really watched that, but we've started watching Jessica Jones as well, and it looks like they're getting it right with the villains in these two. But yeah, Daredevil, pretty brutal, very violent, a lot of blood. Fight scenes they're awesome. I mean, yeah. if you compare it against, say, Arrow and The Flash, which are all a little bit cheaper and so forth, this is pretty brutal, and it's great to watch. You know, the production values are much higher. But yeah, sometimes you need a break. And I think it took us several months to get through this because it was kind of, you had to be in the mood.
Yeah. You know that someone's going to die in a horrible way every episode.
Yeah.
For sure.
I remember here, well, I actually, as Facebook will do, not ruin things, but it'll alert you to things which are coming up. So I heard of someone losing their head in a particular way. And I was like, oh right, okay, when's that coming up? It is good. And I think it kind of rescued Daredevil from what happened with Ben Affleck back...
Sorry, Ben.
...way back when. I remember watching that film in the cinema with my younger brother, and
It's because back then, all comic book adaptations had to be slightly silly. None of them were done well back then. that it was always that, you know, like that era, they always made them, the villains always had to be larger than life, kind of over the top villains, which is Bullseye and Daredevil or is it Electro?
Yeah.
And I remember it was just ridiculous.
With a target on his head.
It's just everything's over the top. It doesn't bring it back to the real, like, you know, this is in Hell's Kitchen in a real place with real people.
Yeah. I just remember, like I said, watching it with my younger brother, us actually turning to each other at various points throughout the film and literally just, well, I think we're using hand signals for, what the fuck? And the whole thing finishes with him kicking the kingpin. What's his name? Michael Duncan Clark. R.I.P. He plays the kingpin and then Daredevil finally defeats him by kicking him in the knees, pretty much. That's what I remember. And it's sort of slow-mo when there's water coming from the ceiling. And that's, you know, that put Daredevil back by, like 10 years or something. But yeah, the show's great.
Probably was by about 10 years, actually. Yeah.
I mean, the show's great. Everyone in it is pretty good.
Donofrio for the win.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Well,
I've got no idea. No, I'm not saying.
O-N-O-F-R-I-O. How else can you pronounce it?
That's a fair point. It's one of those things which I've never said aloud.
Say it now, Ian.
Donofrio.
Yeah, I'm Donofrio. I'm sticking with it.
Okay. So yeah, Daredevil, check it out if you're up for some...
Violence,
yes, some violence. The other thing we've been watching, Daredevil we watched on Netflix. Obviously, we've got two Netflix originals here.
Yeah, that's true.
Blah, 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 check it out.
Promote the Netflix.
So the other one was Master of None. So that came out pretty recently, and I think most people would have polished that off in no time. It was a 20-minute episode.
Only 10 episodes as well.
So it's Aziz Ansari. So he plays a 30-year-old dev. He's an actor in New York. I don't know where I got the synopsis from, who has no idea what he wants. So Annabelle, tell us about it.
Definitely passed over there, Ian. What can you say? Well, so I've not read his book, but apparently there is a lot of crossover. He's got this book called Modern Romance out at the minute, which is him kind of talking about dating in the present day and all of the complications that entails with the internet and, you know, expected etiquette, etc. And I think a lot of it is drawn on that in Master of None. So it's kind of, it's very sweet, it's very lovely to watch. And he goes through everything from relationship with his parents, played by his real parents,
which is amazing.
Who are amazing, through to relationships and friendships, but always obviously with that element of comedy. I mean, you've got Eric Wareheim in there who, just looking at him, is an element of comedy. And like an awesome soundtrack to back it up. And just, yeah, the stories every week are very, very clever and they really hit home if you're around about that same generation especially. It really, there were so many things I was thinking, that's exactly what I've been through, that I completely see what he's talking about. And a lot of good sort of feministy points as well, which is quite nice.
Yeah, social media and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard people complain that it's a little bit too sweet, a little bit too nice. But I like that. I think that maybe we needed a little bit of that. We need a little bit of... Well, okay, we can get on in the real world.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it sort of covers ground which is familiar, but it feels fresh. It feels like I haven't seen it in this way before, but it's...
He's talking about a lot of things that have never been on TV in that way.
Well, yeah, yeah.
The whole Indians on TV thing.
Yeah, obviously, that he was always going to go about that.
And yeah.
He's done it very well. I think there's so much there to relate to. I've spoken to friends who've seen it, and they're like, oh, it's just... It's so real, isn't it? You feel it.
The being a child of a parent from Asian country and what they suffer compared to what you have hit home.
Same here.
Ultimate guilt.
I don't know. It just works. Some of the acting is pretty suspect at times. Like, we talk about his parents, but it's his actual parents and they can act for shit, but that just makes it
brilliant.
Amazing. Like, his dad is... Well, no, both of them are just incredible. So go and watch that. Like, Eric Wareheim is Eric Wareheim. If you've ever seen Tim and Eric, he's just being as he is in that, pretty much. But he directed most of the series, so I'll give him a pass.
But he's good. I think you needed that character because he just adds a sort of slightly ridiculous edge to everything which works.
Yeah. So yeah, Master of None. Good work. I'm sad. I was sad when we finished
it.
I want
to
see
forward,
more.
Looking forward to more.
That's about it, Annabelle. With regards to those bits, as we're planning to do with every episode, we're going to finish with some music, which isn't just me singing. So, but we've got to flip a coin. Do you know what you want to play? If you win again,
don't be bitter, Ian.
Heads or tails?
I'll stick with heads. Oh, that was much more successful with coin toss.
Fucking heads.
Language.
Okay, before you talk about your whatever you're going to play, I'll say I was going to play a track by Elvi, as in the band which Matt Berninger.
I don't know how you say it, but I would have said it like that.
Matt
it
Berninger.
Could be Berninger.
Or Berninger. The dude, singer from The National, and one of the guys from Menomina. So they've basically put together an album which is I would say it's an early evening delight.
It's brilliant. I enjoy it.
I mean, I wasn't quite sure what was going on the first time I heard one track from it, because I just thought it was Matty B singing for someone else, you know. And then I actually paid attention and realized, oh, they've actually got a whole album, and it's just a really nice listen. The only way I can describe it, there are loads of different ideas on there. There's electronic stuff.
I think it's Brent Nom, I can't say his name. Brent Knopf. Because he's like Menomina's very much like that. Like, there's lots of
I've never really listened to
electrical.
Them. Never
it's
got
all
into
it's
them.
His production.
Yeah.
With Matty B's lyrical prowess.
Well, he's just gone apeshit on this. I think there's like no filter there. Some of the stuff he's written is mental.
I suppose
so
they can. There's no expectation.
Exactly. So go and check it out. Put it on when you get home from work and just chill out a bit. I would have played Paula's Alive, because that's the one I've probably listened to the most, which is very nice. So Annabelle, what are you going to play us out
you
with?
You know, I'm gonna go for The Woon, aren't I?
The Woon.
The Woon. I'm just enjoying this song at the minute. I think it cheers me up when you're a bit. So my song is Sharpness by Jamie Woon, which is off his new album, which I think is called Making Time, which he's released quite recently. And he's not had an album for like 4 years. And he's only had one album before this, which was all very much James Blake and electronic-y, and had about 3 really good songs on it, and then a lot of kind of songs which were almost there. And I've always willed him to do well. And there's a few tracks on this album which I'm not 100% sold on, but overall, I'm very much enjoying it. It's stripped down, back to basics, live band, very much kind of about his little croony voice. I don't know why it's a little croony voice. It's not little. It's just a croony voice. And yeah, it's a good song.
So what was it called? The Sharpness or Sharpness?
No, it's called Sharpness.
Sharpness by Jamie Woon.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we play that,
Go the Eurasians.
Everything, yeah. Well, you will own
them. I've just got to back them.
Everything that we've spoken about in this episode can be found on perceptionissues.com. Go and check it out. We will have the links there at some point. And this is
at some point. Yeah. Such professional dedication.
Oh, it'll be there before you know it. This is Sharpness by Jamie Woon. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Darkness cut on the sharpness of your
skip.